is Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. Today's podcast is part two of an interview with Melanie Reed. Melanie is a law professor at Lincoln Memorial University, and she has started implementing a strategy called HARTness. HARTness is something that we use at Clayton Bradley in many of our upper school humanities classes. She learned this process at Clayton Bradley Academy and has tried to implement it at the college level. We're also talking about that transition from K-12 education to upper level education and graduate education. At this time, we join our podcast with Melanie Reed and your host, Kendall Terry. Well, and that's, so there's a book out called Anxious Generation. I don't know if you've read it or not, but it talks about the difference in kids from a play-based childhood to a screen-based childhood. And so the kids that you're getting in college are kind of in that, they're at the beginning of what we would call screen-based childhood era. And so that's the, where there was a shift that happened in like the 90s, in essence, 1990s, where we used to let kids go play. You know, I grew up in that where, you know, it was like you had to be out and you knew your mom's whistle or you knew, you know, whatever, when the street lights would turn on or when it got dark or whatever was the case, that you had to go home. And so you grew up kind of playing with the kids in the neighborhood, or, you know, for me in Southern West Virginia, it was like up in the mountains. Like there was a couple kids maybe around at times, but, you know, it was in the mountains, it was in the streams, it was in, and, you know, I look back now and I go, the amount of distance that I was able to travel as a elementary, middle school child was probably, we would not consider it to be safe now, but that's okay. Yeah, I survived. But in the 90s, there was this switch that took place all of a sudden to kind of this fear culture of, we can't let that happen because something might happen to them, or they might get abducted, or they might get, you know, and there are all of these like horror case scenarios of like, you know, the worst of the worst happening to a kid and that sort of thing. But everything switched, and it was right about the time that all this technology came online too. And so now, you know, when I was growing up, and probably similar to you, yes, of it wasn't like you could just set your kid down in the living room and turn on the TV. Like that didn't distract them outside of Saturday morning cartoons. There wasn't anything that wanted to keep my attention on TV.
So you go outside.
So you go play.
Yes.
And now, you know, all of a sudden, kind of, like I said, it was in the 90s when you look at where this transition started happening. And then in 2000s, you get the smartphones. By 2008, you get the iPhone. And all of a sudden, now you've got these kids that, they've always got an iPad, they've always got a phone, they've always got technology around. And so what used to be a play-based of go play, you know, my mom would say that, like, you got to go play. Like, you got to get out of the house. Our joke was, you know, mom would kick us out of the house in the morning. You come back to the house and there was, like, tea out on the porch. Like, you can drink some tea on the back porch. It's available. You know, you're not going to die. We had a picnic out on the back porch, went for lunch. Like, we weren't allowed in the house. My mom says that's not the case, but we were not allowed in the house. But nowadays, that's not the case. It's not go play. It's here's this screen.
Yes. And the other problem, too, is I think we've embraced too much of an individual model. Whereas before, you know, we would just go out play. And I mean, I'd be out in the neighborhood, you know, riding my bike on my roller skates, just trying to find anybody and go to house to house.
Absolutely.
To house. But now I feel like there's so much pressure on parents, too, because especially post-COVID, everybody has gotten used to the individual model that unless mm-hmm. you have organized a play date or an organized sports event, your child is in the house.
Yep.
And it's hard.
That is.
Because, you know, you have to put a lot of energy out to try to find the other parents, and hopefully they like you so you can get their phone number so you can, like, organize a play date.
Right.
Because it's so individualized. And so I think that hurts, you know, kids, because they walk outside and, you know, little Johnny next door, he's got his own play date and organized sport activity he's off doing, and everybody's just doing their own thing. And I think it's exacerbating the technology issue.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard on parents, because yeah. we're kind of like in a position where I feel like I'm organizing way too much entertainment or trying to get him away from the screen than my parents ever possibly
right.
thought about. They never thought about what I was doing on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the way technology and this individual model have converged to create that problem.
Yeah. Well, and then you add to it the, you know, like you said, my parents probably never was concerned about what I was seeing on a screen or whatever, because you know, outside of Saturday morning cartoons, we did have a Nintendo at one point. I remember Dad brought one home, but we weren't ever allowed to play it hardly. I mean, it was like when it was raining so hard that you couldn't be outside, like, oh, you can play the Nintendo today. We weren't allowed to play that a whole lot growing up. And so we were forced to just go have that open play, that free play. And even what you said of you got to organize a play date. Well, if you're organizing a play date, then how much is on the kid to figure out then? Like, you have selected the person for them to play with.
That's right.
You have set the scene of where they're going to be, probably set certain parameters of what they're going to play with or how they're going to play. And it's like there's so much then that is lost to kind of that figuring out, like, how to interact with others, figuring out how to make friends or how to get through conflict without an adult standing there all the time. You know, growing up, there was a lot of neighborhood conflicts. Now, sometimes those conflicts ended in a way that we would say maybe wasn't the best. Like, there was more than one where we were having a flag football or a tackle football game, even touch football, whatever it was at the moment, and it ended in somebody getting in a fist fight with somebody else. And you get through that conflict. I'm not saying violence should be, you know, is okay, but it's learning how to deal with that conflict.
Yes.
You know, I learned a lot by watching two of my buddies get in a fist fight over a football game. Because I had to learn how not to get in a fist fight then. You know, it's like, I don't want to get beat up by that kid. So, like, I got to figure out how to interact with him then in a positive way. Like, you learn skills through those interactions.
Yes,
of, like, not an adult breaking you up.
I joke around. I'm like, please show me some sort of field or somewhere where I can drop my kid off on a Saturday and say, I'll be back in 5 hours. Go figure out what you're going to do with all the other kids that don't have play dates today.
Right. Yeah,
because seriously, I think there is a lot to be said of giving them ownership in figuring out what you're going to play, who you're going to play with, and go do it.
Yeah,
and give them some ownership because, right, if we're on top of them all the time, controlling everything, they don't learn those kinds of skills. But I haven't found that field yet.
I don't think it exists. I don't think people. I think it would be shut down. But
Lord
in
of
today's
the flies.
World, yeah, that wouldn't survive. But it's one of those of I've had that same kind of emotion dropping my own daughter off at college, and it was like, oh, I hope she doesn't sit in her room and watch YouTube all day long. Like, you know, I hope, one, I need her to go to class, but two, it's like, I hope when class is over, she doesn't just go back and hang out in her dorm room, you know? And so I'm constantly kind of asking those questions sometimes without just directly asking those questions of like, so what'd you do today? You know, like, who did you hang out with? Did you eat dinner? Who'd you eat dinner with? So, because I want to know that she's having interaction. Like, are you talking to people?
Yes.
Are you hanging out with people?
Try having a 10-year-old that's an only child in their playroom by themselves saying, you know, just get off that screen.
Right.
But I don't know, go ride a bike by yourself.
Right. Well, and I deal with that with my eighth grader too, of it's like, well, go right. And she's like, well, so-and-so's not there. And this person's gone to an organized event, you know, a sporting event. And so then it's like, well, I guess go ride your bike by yourself down the street. And I guess come back in a couple of hours. I don't know. Like, don't get into trouble. Like, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah.
Because it's just a different world. So you're getting then kids now in law school that have come through that. So we try to deal with that here at the school as much as we can. There are a lot of screens. Like you said, we want to embrace what they can do. But we look for those opportunities to say, okay, screens have to also be put away. They have to have the ability to think critically and to problem solve. They have to be able to have a conversation with another human. And so we're trying to set that environment. Every school is not necessarily trying to set those environments. And so you're getting now kids in law school that they, I guess they've been somewhat successful because they made it to law school.
Sure.
But you're still seeing that struggle of, like, I've got to be able to hold their attention over here. Otherwise, they're going to slip off into the screen world very quickly.
Well, what we're seeing is we have to transition them to be professionals and to be successful lawyers. And that requires the critical thinking skills, but also those soft skills. We can't just assume that people now know how to speak to other people.
Yeah.
And when a client comes to you, you know, clients are coming to a lawyer because they have a real problem, right?
Yeah.
They're dealing with a real trauma in their life in some form or another.
Absolutely.
So how do I communicate? How do I get that trust so that they'll open up to me? How would I demonstrate empathy with my active listening skills? I mean, a lot of the things that you're teaching in the life, you know, lifelong guidelines and the skills that you teach Those are things that we are talking at the law school level with our students, because resilience is very important. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some.
Yeah.
So how, you know, how do I pick myself up again and keep going and not feel the burnout if I lose this case and I'm very disappointed, you know, for my client? These are all really important skills in being a professional that we're having to, like, have these kind of conversations at the law school level.
Yeah. Well, and being able to listen to somebody in possibly the worst thing that they've ever gone through in their life. Like, it's kind of like, you know, a doctor and a lawyer are two people that many times when you're having a conversation with them, it can turn into the worst day of your life.
Yes.
Very quickly. And it could turn into one of those conversations that from that conversation on, your life is going to be different than what it was before. And so being able to sit down and really hear somebody and not get caught up just in the, like, this is what we need to do, but actually listen to them in that moment and hear them and then try to make connections and figure out, as you were talking about your model that you're using, of how can I now figure out the rules that apply here and apply them in a way that can hopefully help this person through the worst situation that they've ever gone through.
Yes. So critical thinking is just the first, it's one half of the equation. We also, I mean, you know, AI can do a lot, but they cannot do the human skills and the connection that you need. You know, as emotional beings, we have to be able to connect.
Yeah.
And we also have to be able to self-regulate so that we aren't drawn in to the emotions that someone else is bringing, because we have to be there for them.
Right.
So, I mean, those are tricky concepts that we have to kind of teach.
Yeah.
And you're doing that, you know, at a level here, starting from kindergarten. I mean, you know, my son in kindergarten had to stand up and give a presentation on tornadoes.
Yeah.
Kindergarten.
Right.
Practicing public speaking, presentation, confidence, and learning, you know, not to say he ever gets in trouble, but learning, you know, when he is talking to the person.
Yep.
And understanding how that impacted that person when you said something that hurt their feelings. These are things that, you know, if you start at a young age, it's not so drastic later on to be able to practice those skills. But we can't just assume everybody has those skills. You've got to get practice those.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you were talking about restorative practice model is what we use here. It's not just a discipline model. And it's very important to understand, like, I have a big impact on my community.
Yes.
And when I do something that harms my community, I have to be part of the solution to that. I can sit over here and be punished. I can. And I might learn from that. But that doesn't help my community heal at all.
No, and it doesn't help you learn to be empathetic, which is so key.
Yeah. I remember we still play, my son is now 10th grade, and we still play the video of him doing his presentation in kindergarten. He did it on snakes.
Oh, yeah.
And so we love bringing it up. He had his whole poster, and he was all dressed up, and so it was so cute. But I don't know that he enjoys it as much as his mom and I do, but we still bring up the video and show it to him every once in a while.
Well, I can only tell you, seeing it from the law school level, how important that is. Because when we'll do, like, for example, hearings, because we have a mock courtroom.
Yeah.
And I mean, I will see students and they will just absolutely freeze up. And I'll know they're in fight or flight. They cannot access their prefrontal cortex right now.
Right.
There is no critical thinking going on, but it's because they haven't practiced enough. And you can just see it's deer in the headlights. But that's because they haven't had years and years of practicing public speaking and presenting in front of people.
Yeah.
So I always have to tell my students, like, look, it gets easier. This is something natural that's happening. Like, don't think, because the problem is they'll say, I'm terrible at this, I can't do this. And I'm like, you can do it, but you're in fight or flight. It's not going to happen. You can't immediately create some great persuasive argument if you're in this zone of, oh my gosh, a bear is coming at me.
Yeah.
So once I try to explain that, they're like, okay, I'll keep trying to practice. I'm like, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. School is meant to make mistakes. That's the other thing. That's the problem, is sometimes they think I have to be perfect all the time.
Mm.
That's the reason why you're in school, right? To make the mistakes now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and we talk about that with even our teachers of, we expect you to fail sometimes. Like, we expect you to get it wrong. If you're not ever getting it wrong, then you cannot tell me that you're learning not at the level we want you to learn. Because we want you to learn at a deep level means you're going to make some mistakes, you're going to have some failures, you're going to do it wrong, and that's okay, because you're teaching even your kids in that moment of like, hey, we took a risk here, we didn't do it right, like this didn't work like it was supposed to, guys. So let's back up and let's figure out how to solve this. So that's a huge part of what we try to do then with our teachers, of we want to make sure that they understand that you can have a failure, and you involve the class in that. That's learning. Because then that translates to the kids. Take risk. You're going to get it wrong occasionally. And when you get it wrong, that's how we're learning as a group. That's how we're all getting better. And so being able to teach that through Harkness, through those conversations, through, let me take a risk and say, I really make this connection here to this reading. How does that sit in the table? How does that sit in the room? Because you need to learn how that reads so that you can figure that out then down the road. And hopefully figuring out in a safe space helps you then in a more intense space to not get it wrong.
Yes. And the other thing I will say, I think CBA does a good job at, and the Harkness model in particular, is we talk a lot in law school about the importance of self-directed learning.
Mm.
Because nobody is going to be standing over you when you are talking to a client and trying to figure out what the issues are and where the argument is. So you have to have enough wherewithal to be able to figure out where to go for the information, process that information, reflect on it, and then come to create a persuasive argument and a conclusion.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways, CBA does a good job with that, because I see a lot of self-directed learning here, and that the teacher is just kind of helping the student as they're processing information. But in the Harkness level as well, I'm giving you the text, I can talk to you after you finish the Harkness, but let's see how you process this information and what you can get out of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the future, because, you know, Bill Daggett was saying how we need good prompt writers.
Yep.
And we need editing skills. Those are higher level skills than just reading comprehension, but to be able to take what ChatGPT or Claude is saying, understand what they're saying, and then make it your own.
Yeah.
And make the argument. And that's really how we have to look at it. And I think Harkness is a good way to measure whether they are learning how to be self-directed learners.
Yeah. Well, that editing ability to be able to read it and go, is that what I thought it was going to say? Does that line up? Does that make sense? And in your profession, does that line up with the law? Is that a correct interpretation? Is that a correct connection point? Or is that off in some random direction? Because AI will do that. You know, it will. There's whole terms for that of hallucinating. It was one of the words that they'll use with it, where it will, if it doesn't know the answer, it will just make up an answer.
Well, and that's something, when we were growing up, we never had to think about, is this fake news?
Right.
Is what I'm hearing, right, the truth or not?
Yeah.
But now our kids have to do that, and they have to question the information that they're getting. And it's funny, when we go home every day, one of our favorite, other than Ignition Point podcast, of course, is The Big Fib.
Okay.
And the podcast, all it is they have two people that claim to be experts on the topic is. It could be cotton candy or soccer. And they say there's a kid contestant, and the kid has to decide who's the expert and who's the liar.
Oh, wow.
And we listen to this all the time and try to figure out who's going to be the expert, who's going to be the liar. Because this generation, they need to be able to discern from all this information being bombarded, what is the truth and what do I need to discard? And that's something new.
Yeah.
That's something new.
And one of the things that Scott is doing as part of the Harkness discussions and stuff right now in his class is they're looking at that biased language and teaching kids how to recognize that language that is intended to persuade you to have an opinion, as opposed to language that is unbiased. And even learning those little terms that you'll hear of, you know, in a news report or in an article that you're reading, of what are the words that you should watch out for, to say, if this word is being used, that could be, not saying it always is, that could be them trying to persuade me to an opinion as opposed to just giving me information for my own understanding. And so that's a huge skill to learn.
Huge.
Like you said, when we were growing up, there was never a fake news even thought out there. There was never a thought of what I was hearing was trying to persuade me to an opinion. It was just they were telling me what happened. They were telling me the events of the day or whatever. And now we know that most of our news stations, if not all, are trying to persuade me, I feel like, to have an opinion as opposed to just giving me the information.
Right.
And so you've got to kind of go through that process as you're listening to that. And that's a tough skill as an adult to have, let alone as a teenager growing up in today's world, as a college student trying to become an adult and start that adult journey. There are people that are trying to pull you into an area that you might not want to be in, but if you're not careful, you might end up in the middle of.
100%.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you coming in and sitting down, talking about how your experiences with Harkness and then how you're looking at that at the law school level. And I love hearing that when I came through, you know, my undergrad and grad work, it was all pretty much still a traditional model. And so I love hearing that people are trying to do things a little bit different and looking at what helps kids learn and how can we modify this a little bit. And I know there's still a lot of change that can take place from preschool all the way through graduate degrees of recognizing how does the brain really learn and not just memorize and dump and move on.
Well, keep doing what you're doing because the communication that you all have and the open access that we have to, you know, amazing people, you know, and educators like yourself and Linda Jordan and Bill Daggett. I mean, yeah. It's great. I'm still trying to figure out how at the law school level I can bring in sheep's brains and have students dissect them. Because I'm yep. like, I still remember that as if it was yesterday.
Oh, so, yeah. So big deal. We'll bring it back up. It'll be another thing that we'll do down the road. You know, we kind of put it on rotation. Some people couldn't handle that all the time. But we will bring that back up for parents again. This October, coming up at the end of October, we've got Dr. Daggett coming back to campus and is going to do a presentation on a Tuesday evening, the 29th, and then on the 30th he'll do a coffee and tea right after family gathering, and then he'll do a staff session later in the day. But we want to continue bringing those people around to say, like, what are you seeing in the whole world? And then because we don't want to live inside the bubble of CBA and miss something out there that we should be doing. And so we want to keep bringing these people in to speak into this is what's happening at the larger scale. This is what you're doing that's really good. And here's some things that maybe you need to look at modifying or changing.
And it takes a village to, you know, grow and educate a child. And I like the CBA model because, you know, you all identify that it takes both educators and parents and everybody to kind of help students in this world that can be somewhat complicated sometimes. So
yeah,
appreciate
absolutely.
What you're doing. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. This has been the Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. If you'd like to find out more about our school, you can visit us on our webpage, www.claytonbradleyacademy.org, or you can find us on social media sites at CBASTEM or at Clayton Bradley Academy. We hope you have a wonderful day. We'll be right back.